The healthcare detective Frank Lally has written a book for Simon & Schuster about how to get affordable healthcare. Called Your Best Healthcare Now, it's available online, in-store, wherever fine books are sold. Mr. Lally is also the health correspondent for Parade and the former editor of Money and George magazines and the senior advisor to healthcare.com. But as the healthcare detective, he has been very busy detecting during the pandemic. And I think we're going to have to create a whole other identity or a whole other set of files. We're going to call them the pandemic files.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Anyway, we're not Zooming this, so you can't tell, but I'm actually dressed up in a tuxedo this morning to do this very formally.
Well, that's good. So, I'm liking the whole tie thing. You know, yeah. We see people. There are a couple, I just digress momentarily, but there are a couple of people who don't seem to understand that you can see the bed that they are sitting on during their Zoom. I mean, on regular TV. And
yeah,
a lot of people have been much more formal. A lot of people have been styled.
Let's get to this because we had a ton here of new information on COVID-19. And a lot of it is good, but a lot of it is troubling as well for Connecticut and the surrounding states. COVID-19 is running wild in the country. We know that. It's more than half of the country is really in a terrible situation. But in this tri-state area up here in New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, we're relatively safe. I mean, in fact, Connecticut had no COVID deaths 2 days in a row this week. Even better, only 1% of those tested have COVID, and that's down from 40% in April. And that mainly means that highly contagious virus is virtually no longer spreading in Connecticut. But there are some tough challenges ahead, Jill, and Governor Lamont is scrambling to block visitors from the 31 high infection states in this country now from sparking another surge here. And that includes states as close as Maryland and Delaware, as well as biggies like, you know, Florida, Texas, and California. Second, we need a plan that convinces parents and teachers that it's safe to reopen our public schools in the next 4 or 5 weeks. That deadline is coming up fast. And third, we need to figure out why Connecticut just got a batch of COVID tests with dangerous false positives and make sure, boy, that just does not happen again. I mean, the problem is that Connecticut's testing remains inadequate. I'll use a polite word.
That's very nice.
That's the least of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just sorry to interrupt, but this is not in defense of Connecticut, but I go back to it's not just Connecticut. There are problems. I go back to my nephew. I don't know whether they're still waiting for results from those first tests, but it took 2 weeks in California. California!
No, it's happening here, too. Right. I mean, you can't get results in a week or more. I mean, this is happening way too much. And it makes isolating anyone or tracking and tracing, I mean,
ridiculous.
That's totally useless.
Exactly.
Yeah, but look, let's start with the visitors because there's a lot to report. Now, Kevin Dillon, he's the very able head of Bradley International Airport, recommended to Governor Lamont that now we're down to about 1,000 passengers a day coming in from the high infection state. So Dillon says, hey, got an idea. Let's test them at Bradley, then quarantine them that need it, okay, and treat as needed. So that was a reasonable idea. But instead, without the courtesy of a heads up to Dillon, Lamont decided to require all infection state visitors that's arriving by plane, train, car, bus, however they get here, to fill out an electronic form disclosing their itinerary and contact information. So you got the information. Then, at best, Connecticut's short-staffed Department of Health will spot check for compliance. Okay, you can see the problems already. Now, the effort alone appears to have driven down the passengers coming into Bradley by about a third. That makes Dillon nervous about the long-term viability of his airport. Also, the governor is now adding fines, or at least he's threatening to do it. It's kind of a head snapper. He tries to get it both ways here. He says, I'm going to fine violators up to $1,000. And then he says, but I have no plans to fine anybody. Okay, figure that out. In New York, Cuomo is fining violators a minimum of $2,000 and up to $10,000 for repeat offenders. So experts estimate all in all here, Lamont will be lucky if half the visitors comply, fill out those forms, especially the thousands arriving each day by car and bus. Jill, I checked. Greyhound has up to 7 buses a day into Hartford alone from cities like Dallas, Houston, and Miami, and they're inexpensive tickets. It's $150 to $200 to get into the state. Beyond that, countries around the world report massive hacking into these online visitor forms where they tried it. There's been massive hacking. That's going to lead to lawsuits against Connecticut. So look, Jill, what do you make of this Lamont's visitor forms? Does it make any sense to you?
No.
I think you kind of summed it up. I mean, it discourages visitors, it has so many aspects.
But the downside of discouraging visitors is some of us, I am, again, watching with interest just various local tourism for Connecticut, you know, because people need people to be moving about somewhat. This is a balancing act, and that travel thing is so porous is the best word I can come up with. It's lunacy. But I'll stop with no.
It's trying to have it both ways. And anyway, look. But frankly, the visitor problem is a blip compared to the public schools. Connecticut's leading teachers union is demanding weekly testing of all 530,000 students and 100,000 teachers and staff. I mean, that's 630,000 people. 630,000 tests in a week in the schools, or the schools stay shut, says the union. But get this, Connecticut has only done 650,000 tests total since March. By the way, the entire United States is only testing about 700,000 people a day, okay? Plus, these tests cost money. It's $100, $117 each. Who knows? Because Connecticut isn't disclosing the exact figure. Let's figure $100. Connecticut tests would cost $2 billion for the school year. And the union also wants added PPE, I mean, the gowns and masks in the classroom. They want plexiglass partitions where necessary in the classroom. They want more high disinfecting. They also want a computer allowance for teachers who are teaching remotely for their computers and the electricity. That adds another $820 a student. That's another $500 million, and we're now up to $2.5 billion. Now, cost aside, because I don't want you to get me wrong on this one, the union's demands for safe schools are not unreasonable. Third graders and up who get COVID are as infectious as adults. More than 40% of Connecticut teachers have pre-existing conditions, which makes them susceptible to getting really ill from COVID and perhaps even dying. And 20% of parents say they won't send their kids back into Connecticut schools if the schools are unsafe. So Connecticut teachers are not allowed to strike. They cannot strike. But they can demand binding arbitration in each school district. And that could, you know, if there's an impasse here, that could drag on into December. And once again, in my point of view here, I think Governor Lamont is trying to get it both ways. He tells the teachers union, I've got your backs. And then he's, believe me, is against testing. He signaled that very strongly. He isn't, the testing is not going to happen. So look, no one is sure how this is going to work out. Here's my prediction. I think the union is just going to have to drop that testing demand. It costs way too much money. That's not going to happen. But I think it will get the PPE. It will get the more disinfecting. It'll get the partitions. And it'll get staged openings with split sessions. That's very important. Studies show that if students go back to school 5 days a week, there's likely to be 5 COVID cases in a matter of weeks. But if they alternate between class and remote learning at home, there'll only be about 5 cases a semester. It'll still be in the schools, but at a much lower level. So, Jill, what are your hopes for the public schools this year?
That they reopen, and or that, like for example, each one, in my view, in my understanding, and it could be completely wrong, is that each district or each region or each area has to work out their own situations based on what their story is. So, for example,
that's exactly right.
Region 1 in Falls Village here details their school reopening plan. That was in the Republican American. And they, you know, even though things could change as it happened, since, you know, we've had a limited number of cases here, it is set up and schedules have gone out. And, you know, that's what they have submitted. Now, on the 21st, also in the Republican American, the Connecticut Department of Education tells schools to brace for fall reopening. Again, they have to put in their plans. And what baffles me just generally is, I've never been a big proponent, this is my personal thing, so I apologize for my view in the middle of your show, but holding a negotiation through the press is just seems moronic to me. So,
well,
you know, it's, yeah. It is...
Well, opening salvos on both sides. But look, I think where they're going to end up here is a staged reopening. I mean, there's... It's not going to be 5 days a week in these districts. It'll be a split deal where you go to school maybe a day or two a week and the rest is remote. At least that's the way it'll open, and then we'll see how we go from there. It really worries me, the first big outbreak in a school and what happens at that school and what's the impact in a public relations point of view with parents all and parents and teachers, because teachers don't want to go back into these classrooms if they're going to get sick and they're older and they've got
but
family situations at home. So,
but you also have younger teachers. I mean, it seems to me, again, that this can be. But it has to be on. Remember how in food it was became hyper local? You became locavore.
Yeah.
And we started out as radio. Robin Hood Radio started out as locavore, mm-hmm. And this reopening, let's call it, has to. You have to look at your community and your situation, because it is so not one size fits all. So not.
It'll go district by district, but I'm telling you, it's going to be staged opening and it's going to be split session. But all right, let's talk about testing, because that's really a root problem here. In addition to the state, this is good old Connecticut, only doing half the testing that it promised. A batch of tests from a favored lab, that was a lab that had corner-cutting okay from the Trump administration, just came back with dangerous false positives, mainly among residents and staff in senior living facilities. So the question is whether these clean residents, these false positive, they didn't have COVID, were they moved into a COVID-only ward where they actually got COVID and perhaps even died? So there's retesting going on. Two of these false positives now have COVID. One has died, but that person was in hospice, so we're not sure it was a result of the false positives. Department of Health is investigating. They haven't gotten to the bottom of it. Representative Jonathan Steinberg says his public health committee may investigate as well. So let's keep an eye on that. And add to that worry, the fact that Connecticut's testing labs are overwhelmed, as you pointed out earlier, perhaps half the people in this state tested outside of hospitals, that's, you know, like going on to the CVS to get tested, are now waiting a week to 10 days or more for results, and that people have to wait more than a day or two. There's a great risk the number of them will go out into the community and spread the virus. And this crush, Jill, it's just going to get worse in the fall flu season, especially since President Trump is withholding billions of dollars from testing because he thinks more cases make him look bad. You test more, you get more cases. He doesn't like it. It makes him look bad. So he's withholding money for testing. So I honestly don't see a solution here. I really don't. Do you see anything hopeful that I'm missing with this testing situation?
Yes. What has to happen, and I have no information on it, because it hasn't been released, but what has to happen is you've got to get the fast tests and you've got to get them out, because it's the only way it will work.
The fast tests up to now are the ones that have the false positives, that have not reliable results.
Yes,
the faster those tests go, the less reliable they are.
I understand.
You need a test. Look, if the test results came back within a day or two, that's reasonable. Okay, I can wait at home a day or two to see if I actually have COVID before I go out into the community and potentially spread the disease. If it gets beyond 2 days or 3 days, I mean, even if you're trying to track and chase, it doesn't make any sense because you've contacted too many people and you've asked people to stay home, not really knowing whether they have COVID,
or not.
They're not going to comply 100%. So it takes money. It takes billions of dollars. If we're testing 700,000 people in the United States now, we probably should be testing four times as many. But we have an administration that doesn't want to spend the money on the testing and doesn't like the results because it makes the administration
look bad. But who's spending
the
money? And this is where politics is just nauseating. So fortunately, we're out of time in this department. But no, fortunately, yeah. we are out of time. But it would be really most helpful if the politics were synthesized or exfiltrated from this so that you could actually fix it. And the first thing an executive would do is you've got to get fast tests, but they have to be correct, because that was a very important point that a lot of people missed with the kinetic false positives. It was more like, oh, well, yeah, they're not all reliable. No, it wasn't that. It was that people who were fine were put in with people who were not fine. And
it was a batch. And let's not forget now, that's a lab that got corner cutting exemptions to get a speedier result, okay? So the administration, the FDA, came in and said, okay, you can cut some corners here to get some results. Well, guess what? You get false positives. And then if it's really in nursing homes primarily, where the protocol is, if someone tests positive for COVID, they move them into a COVID-only ward so they don't infect other people without COVID. Okay, so here comes somebody without COVID being housed in a COVID ward, and guess what? Maybe they get COVID, and guess what? Maybe they die. That just can't happen. We cannot allow that sloppiness, and we can't do it in the name of speed, okay? So warp speed for a vaccine makes me very, very nervous. Warp speed for testing makes me very, very nervous. Warp speed to open our schools 5 days a week without the assurances that those classrooms are really safe for the students, their families, and the teachers? Come on. This is beyond politics. This is common sense. We need to get a grip on this. All of it. Lamont administration, the President of the United States, and everybody listening here today, we need a common sense approach on all three of these things, our visitors, our schools, and our testing. And we need it now.
Thank you, Frank, the healthcare detective and senior advisor to healthcare.com. Send your questions or concerns about finding affordable healthcare to healthcaredetective@robinhoodradio.com. Frank will try to address as many of your questions as he can on future broadcasts. Also, look for his book, Your Best Healthcare Now, available online, in store, and on my desk.